Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day three of the US Open, where it's 5:02 p.m. We're recording part one, as per usual, in the Media Garden. Myself, Catherine Ritzker, David Law, Matt Roberts. The reason we're recording part one now is, well, it's twofold. Fold number one is that we all want to go and watch Dominic Thiem against Ben Shelton, which is currently in the latter stages of the opening set. Fold number two is that it was a very stacked day early on. In fact, in terms of first matches on the schedule today, there was a period of about an hour where the following things were all happening. Taylor Townsend was beating Beatriz Haddad-Maia on grandstand in the most extraordinarily atmospheric match out there. It was real vibes. We had Kevin Bridges slash Dominic Stricker beating Stefanos Tsitsipas. That was also on grandstand a little bit later on. We had, oh no, it was court 17, wasn't it? Taylor Townsend, Haddad-Maia, Tsitsipas. I've written Bridges in the agenda. I've got to keep remembering to say Stricker.
I actually said it in commentary today.
That was on grandstand. Coco Gauff and Mira Andreeva were on Ash. And over on Armstrong, a match that we thought we could stop paying attention to at the time when everything was happening at once, because Daniel Collins seemed to be cruising over Elisa Mertens, and then suddenly this extraordinary Mertens fight back. She's really desperately making a play for the intensity list, is Elisa Mertens, and that match suddenly became an epic. So there was really a period in the first couple of hours of the day when things were frantic and Matt was complaining of not having enough eyes.
I think that was the first time this tournament I'd done that, actually, wasn't it? Too many things happening at the same time. But I love it, really. I do complain, but I do love those hours where everything's happening all at once.
Yeah, a lot of grueling tennis being played in the most grueling imaginable conditions today, because yesterday we talked about the air feeling like soup, and today that is still the case, but the temperature is a few degrees hotter. We're all sat here drinking rehydration salts, and we have not done any strenuous physical activity today. So goodness me. Matt did go to the gym this morning.
Oh, yeah. But did you do anything in the gym, or did you just do one of those where you dress up, walk back in and go, I've been to the gym?
Well,
he came out
Catherine
looking
can
sweaty.
Confirm I was sweaty.
He was sweaty.
Back.
Okay.
Yeah. Where would we like to start? Of those matches I mentioned, where, folks, would we like to start? David, I'll give you first choice.
I would actually like to hear from you, if you saw it at all, about the Taylor Townsend win, because there was a line in commentary from Annabel Croft that comparing her to John McEnroe in terms of style of play. I didn't realise she was so into Taylor Townsend's game, but I think we are all into it as well, and I'm only sorry that we don't get to see her in singles that often. She's a brilliant doubles player. She's managed to break through and become a real contender in all the doubles. But when you actually get a chance to watch Taylor Townsend play singles, it's just so alluring and attractive. I'm drawn to it because it's so different.
Yeah, I think the sort of defining Taylor Townsend match, where it, you know, very much was John McEnroe coming to the net-esque, was of course that one here a few years ago against Simona Halep. The sort of interesting thing about that is she got into the draw here, Taylor Townsend, through Simona Halep's late withdrawal from the US Open. And she has absolutely made the most of that, won a couple of matches here. And I think the main thing that sort of struck me about this match was just how lively it was out on court 17. You always know that Taylor Townsend's going to get so much support. And because she's playing Beatrice Haddad Meyer, who, you know, like we said the other day when she played Sloane Stephens, still got a lot of support in that match as well. There's always a wave of Brazilian support following her. So you had these rival fan bases going up against each other. And Taylor Townsend's tennis is just so electric. I was actually struck today by the fact that she wasn't always coming to the net. Like, she came to the net a lot, and her hand skills are maybe the best in the world, the way she can pick balls up off her toes and put away volleys. But actually, generally, she was just dictating in all the ways, even from the baseline. It was a joy to watch. Haddad Meyer was a breakdown at the start of the second set, got it back, turned it into a bit of a battle, as she always does. But Taylor Townsend managed to get the win. And she said after one of her doubles wins recently, you know, wait for the new chapter of my career. I sort of wondered what that would be. And she said after this win today, on court, this is my time. This is my time. And, you know, maybe she is going to try and make even more of the singles game. I'd love to see. I remember how good her results were on clay this year. She beat Jessica Pegula in Rome, won a lot of matches on that surface. And I think we all said, want to see her on the grass, because with that game style, you feel like it would fit. And she didn't really have a very good grass court season.
She lost to Sophia Kennan in an incredible qualifying match.
Yeah.
Wimbledon, didn't she? And it's just one of those, isn't it? Can you get your ranking up so that you're automatically in all the best events and then pit your skill base up against the rest?
Yeah, she's stuck in that nether zone, isn't she? Like Borna Goyo that we were watching.
Yes,
Catherine. I did not know that name was going to come out of your mouth.
I did. Catherine and I were talking about him earlier.
But you feel like if he could just get into the world's top 60,
yeah,
he could then get in. He could then move on from there. But it's making the big leap from being stuck in the qualifying nether zone to getting direct entry into the biggest events. That's the biggest leap that you have to make, and it's so hard. It feels like you're swimming against the tide. Yeah. Everything's stacked against you to do it.
She is the what might have been player of the last 10 years in many ways, I think, because, you know, she was a world number one junior. Everybody recognised her talent. She was terribly treated, I thought, by the USTA.
Unequivocally, appalling, terribly treated.
And, you know, lost her career, lost big chunks of her career, and has never really been able to make it go the way it could have done. But what is she, mid-20s now? I mean, there's still some time, I think, for her to show more of this. And I'm just really pleased for her.
Yeah, she hasn't come into press conference yet because, of course, she's playing doubles. She actually just walked past us with her partner, Leila Fernandez, with whom she's had some fantastic success this year. So I'm going to be watching out for Taylor Townsend in the matches to come, and I hope it is matches plural. She did so well, obviously, to win, but to prevent that going three. I mean, all Beatrice and Admire matches go three. 7-6 first set, 7-5 second set. It felt like a marathon match. So for her to withstand the force that is Beatrice Haddad Meyer trying to sap all your energy over a period of 3 hours, I thought was incredible. She has such guile, such precision on the serve. That's very John McEnroe-esque, the way the ball seems to bend in the air on the serve and plop right in the postage stamp in the corner of the service box. I love her. She's wonderful. I hope this continues.
Yeah. Who's she got now?
She has got Karolina Muchova now, who until just moments ago, David, was loitering just over your right shoulder.
Oh.
Looked like she was trying to find an interview to do. I should have invited her over.
Well, she is doing one over your right shoulder.
Oh, yes, there she is. In a blue outfit.
A big yes, please. That match.
That is just a fantastic match on paper, isn't it? Talk about guile and finesse and angles
skills
and hands. Oh, put that on a good court. Yeah. What's the one? There's one court where the press seats are long Lennet.
17.
Is it too big a match for 17?
Yes, I think so. Taylor Townsend was on 17 today, and that was against Haddad Maia.
It's probably a grandstand match or an Armstrong match, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also good press seats.
Oh, are they? Oh, yeah. Good. Okay.
If you're not in the sun, Matt came back from an hour in the grandstand press seats today watching... I really do need to change the agenda here because it does say Kevin Bridges, which I found funny as I was typing it, but now...
It's going to be the new Blake Shelton.
I'm going to have to call him by his... proper name at some point.
It's also freaking me out because you've spelt Bridges like Andrew Bridges, who does our Twitter, rather than Kevin Bridges.
Anyway,
it's all happening.
Matt was out watching Dominic Stricker for an hour earlier in the full sun in the press seats, and he hasn't been the same man since. You've come back a shadow of yourself, Matt.
It was so hot. I mean, I left because when they started a fifth set, that is how hot I was. You know, everyone knows I will watch any fifth set of tennis, basically, or final set of tennis. I just couldn't stand it anymore. I thought, I'm going to enjoy this more from the media centre and the air conditioning. I don't understand how the players do it.
Conversely, though, there was really something of the diesel about Dominic Stricker today, wasn't there? 6-3 in the fifth. He beat Stefanos Tsitsipas, won the first set, but ended up going 2-1 down. Tsitsipas served for it in the fourth set. At all of these points, particularly when he went 2-1 down, lost the third set on a tiebreak, having had a set point, I thought, that's probably it now. You've had your moment, young player, haven't played many best of five set matches, if any. I mean, this is his first ever US Open. He's into round three. I thought, this was fun. But it's almost certainly over now. To come back and win in five was an unreal effort, I thought.
Where do you put the unreal effort versus the choke?
I think Tsitsipas will have a lot of regrets about the game he played when he was serving for the match at 5-3. Played a really poor game. As Catherine's described, he'd got the match under control. He was a breakdown at the start of that fourth set, but then he managed to break twice, and it looked like Stricker was short on energy. It looked like Tsitsipas had him, and you know, things were good. I was really struck by the fact that this was probably my first time watching Tsitsipas live when his father wasn't in the box, and it was a very different experience, very calm, very relaxed, you know. And the press seats on grandstand are right behind one of the coaching boxes, and it was Tsitsipas's, and I was struck by how at ease things seemed. He then played an absolute shocker of a game to let Stricker back in, and then from that moment on I thought Stricker played really, really well again, you know, sort of found his level again. So Tsitsipas led him back in, absolutely, but Stricker came up with some fantastic shots. He sort of lulls you in a bit. He's not high energy on the court at all. He's not showtime. But his shot making is pretty special.
Matt came back from watching, and it was the first time I think any of us have watched him live, and I was quite excited about what that experience had been like. I was unable to go myself because I would have passed out in the heat. And Matt said, he's very good, he's not fun.
Right. And then he started singing along to Whitney Houston at the change of ends, just to make that take go out of date almost immediately, because that was perhaps
that
the
was
most
a great
fun thing
moment
that anyone's done all tournament.
Yeah, it was a great moment.
As he's 5-2 down in the final set, moments away from his biggest ever win, he's just chomping on his protein bar or whatever, singing along to I Want to Dance with Somebody.
There he is, David, in all his agricultural glory. He's coming out to do some interviews.
Can
over
confirm
there
that he is agricultural. I mean, from behind, if somebody said to you that that's Stan Wawrinka, I would believe
he
them.
He is so Wawrinka-like. Doesn't have a single-handed backhand, but
he's a lefty.
He's a lefty, double-handed backhand, but he is. I mean, I think he must be the youngest player ever to achieve agricultural status, because it usually takes a few years to develop a barrel chest, doesn't it? I mean, Stan Wawrinka, a famously late bloomer. Dominic Stricker has all the attributes of all the positives of being agricultural, so strong, so resilient in going the distance, and yet he also has such sweet timing. It actually doesn't feel like his stature is what's producing the power, it's the timing that's producing the power.
Yeah, and like Wawrinka, he seems to have this engine just hums along and he keeps on going. And I think that is very rare in a 21-year-old, all the way through that match, I'm expecting a turnaround. Even when he won the first set, even when it was a tight second set, you know, Tsitsipas has become a pretty resolute professional over the years. And even if he's not playing that well, he knows how to win. I don't think of him as somebody who loses a lot of matches of that type. And he's keeping the scores close. But fair play to Stricker. He kind of had a second wind,
yeah.
But he never went away and just dropped in energy and had a dive the way you normally expect with somebody who's inexperienced.
Mm. He's real never too high, never too low vibes. Yeah. And look, he's got Benjamin Bonzi now for a place in the fourth round. Okay, recovery is going to be a big question mark. He's never had to recover from a match like that before and come back and play 2 days later. But Bonzi taking out Chris Eubanks, who was not in full health today, that was tough to see him lose in four sets, especially with the draw opening up the way it has. What an opportunity for Dominic Stricker.
Yeah, huge. I mean, I think that's a big test that all players have to pass, backing up a big win. That is something that is so hard to do. He saved a match point in qualifying, Stricker, in the second round. Played an absolutely epic match in qualifying. So he's done that thing, you know, that we often do talk about, of playing a little bit with house money. You know, he could have gone out in qualifying here. And yeah, there's just so many positive signs for him. I was reading his ATP bio, you know, his sort of personal lines on there, and I was really struck by the fact that his serve was really good today, and that was apparently something that Roger Federer absolutely impressed on him. You have to improve your serve. That has to be the sort of staple of your game, and it really was today. Showed great composure when serving it out after going love 30 down, hit a couple of aces. Yeah, just so much to be impressed by. But, you know, just another new experience trying to back up a big win in the next round.
We have lots more very uplifting, fun stuff to talk about in this part of the show, but should we get the massive bummer out of the way?
Well, what's the massive bummer?
Dominic Thiem has just retired.
Oh, no.
Against Ben Shelton, having lost the first set on the tiebreak. It just all seems to have devolved extremely quickly. It looked like a really good match. They're in a tiebreak. And then Dominic Thiem is doubled over, saying he can't go on after a bathroom break, seemingly suffering from gastroenteritis.
Quite a few players who are going down unwell, aren't there? I mean, we saw Christopher Eubanks looking unwell. Don't know the nature of it, but you know he's gone out, and that is a rough situation. I mean, particularly if it is something that starts going around the locker room and the player lounge. I mean, players become paranoid, coaches don't want players to be on site very long. What a shame.
If the tennis gods are listening, please send Dominic Thiem a bit of luck.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Oh,
Actually, send him quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with a bit and build from there. I think he has earned it. Moving on to more uplifting things. Coco Gauff today against Mira Andreeva. I say that not as a not Mira Andreeva fan. I think she's great, but she's 16. Her time will come. I think it's perfectly fine to be seeing performances from her where she looks like an unpolished 16-year-old and where Coco Gauff looked like an authoritative threat for the title.
Yeah, I think you could be a fan of both of those players and be happy with what you saw from each one of them, because Andreeva broke Gauff in the very first game, and I'm immediately thinking, you know, she just excites me as a talent. Anytime I watch her play, I think she can win against anybody, because she's just going to be so good if she can frankly tread a similar professional path to what Goff has trodden and have the same attitude. And you know, it's not easy to do. That's a talent in itself, isn't it?
And Goff gave her some great advice at the end of the match in terms of like how to make that transition from talented 16-year-old, which Goff has been. And she said, not every match is life and death. Like, it took me a while to learn that, but I know that now. I see people playing in their 30s, and I know that to get that far, you can't treat every match as life and death. And it does very much feel like Mira Andreeva is still in that, treating everything like life and death. Yeah, she's got an example there to look to in Coco Gauff.
But I felt like I was watching great progression from both players in the course of this match, in that Gauff didn't get rattled by being broken in the first game. She reels off four games in a row, just, as you said, stamped her authority on the match. And I was expecting I thought there was a real chance that Andreeva might just go away at this point and just throw the racket about, lose her mind, and it might be 6-1, 6-1. It could very easily be that, except instead she kept the score relatively respectable in the first set, went to break down in the second, and then just ignited, and they both did. And watching them go toe-to-toe with their respective skill sets was... I saw the best rally of the tournament in that match. 30 strokes, and it involved wonderful shot making from the baseline from Andreeva, a drop shot, a lob, another drop shot, and yet Goff still reached them all and still hit the winning shot. She is a marvel in the way she can move about a tennis court. And she's also, I mean, there were still some crumpled forehand errors, but there's generally just a conviction about the way she's playing.
She loved the conditions, didn't she? I mean, I know we've talked about how tough they were today, and it's much more complex than just physical fitness. You know, some people thrive in these conditions and some don't, even though they're all sort of highly tuned athletes. But Goff said, this is like South Florida, this is like where I'm from, and it was quicker than when she played the other night. She was able to penetrate the court more with her shots, and yeah, she just stamped her authority on it. Tried, you know, as you said, there were some really nice long rallies, but generally I felt like Goff was trying to keep it short and be aggressive and just take control, and she did that brilliantly today.
I don't know if either of you read her press conference transcript, but there was some really interesting stuff in there about her forehand. She talked a lot about it without actually mentioning it by name. There was a moment in the press conference where a journalist had to go, are you talking about the forehand? She went, yeah, I am. She said, obviously, she played Andreeva in Paris, and Goff ended up winning that match, but it was very, very close. She won the first set, Andreeva, until she had a real collapse out there. But she said that she thought that Andreeva had come onto court with the same tactics as she had had for their match in Paris, which of course by and large had worked out really well, but that those tactics didn't work today because Goff's a different player to who she was when they played in Paris. And reading between the lines of what she was saying, she considers herself a different player because her forehand isn't as attackable like it was. Basically what she was saying was the how to play Coco Gauff playbook has been torn up and a new one hasn't been written yet. She was basically saying, look, I know the tactic that everybody's been deploying against me. She didn't have an issue with that. But she said, nah, that's not working anymore, guys. Got to find a new one. And maybe they will. And maybe that tactic isn't busted forever because, you know, she hasn't made any technical changes to the forehand. It's all in the mind at the moment, but I found that absolutely fascinating.
Also quite an interesting message to send to the rest of the locker room, isn't it? And I was wondering today, because I think, I don't care what AI says, she's got a blooming hard draw here, and I actually wonder whether that may end up helping her if she can keep getting through these matches, get into the sharp end, and particularly the showdown, if she got to it with Świątek, would that help her? And I think it may well, having all these tough opponents on paper.
Well, on paper, she might not have quite as tough an opponent as she and we were expecting. Victoria Azarenka's just stomped past you, David. I think that means she lost to Zhu Lin.
Okay. Yeah, this
In fact, I'm going to categorically say that was not the walk of a player that had come from a set down to beat Zhu Lin.
It's prime position, this, isn't it, for judging body language of people?
Yes. Speaking of losses, Coco Gauff will not face Danielle Collins in round three. She will face potential intensity list newbie Elisa Mertens, who came back for the second match running from match points down 3-6, 7-6, 6-1 from Mertens, saving two match points in the second set, having also saved three in her first round match against Miriam Bjorklund. Again, this is another one where you ask the question, where's the balance between the Mertens fight back and the Collins, maybe not choke, but certainly letting it slip through her fingers?
Yeah, it's rough for her. And I remember I was commentating on the Djokovic match at the time that was going on, but we had it on in a monitor, and I just looked out the corner of my eye and saw Collins with, I think, 6-5 in the second set tiebreak, with so one of those match points, and she was just getting pumped up, and I commentated on a couple of more points, and the next thing I saw when I looked over at the TV was Elisa Mertens shouting, "Let's go!" and thinking, wow, there's a turnaround of human beings for a start, let alone the scoreline. And I think, you know, huge credit to her for that. And then in the third set, you just, written all over Collins's face was just deflation, and she just got nothing left by the looks of it. So it was an interesting match to witness.
Apparently Elisa Mertens just loves New York.
Yeah, she was saying that.
I know.
She said, I just thrive here.
Which is surprising to me. I would have had her on the Vondrosheva-Swiatek list of
same.
Maybe not loving
New York. And I would also have her
on
the list of, like, I know Elisa Mertens. Like, I don't expect to find out loads new about her, but...
But this year she's been really intense, as you say, in a lot of Grand Slam matches.
Where has that come from? Because I've never associated that with her at all. Until now.
Don't know. Don't know. First registered it at the French Open this year. Oh, there go Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula.
Off to the doubles
court. Headed out to grandstand.
Azarenka did lose 6-3, 6-3. You were quite right.
Each wearing their headphones as they walk to court, rather than having a chat.
Now they are having a chat despite wearing the headphones.
Oh, okay.
So Coco Gauff against Elisa Mertens, round three. It's still a good match. I mean, it's not quite the Friday night match that ESPN might have been dreaming of, / Catherine Whittaker was dreaming of. But it's still a cool match, and it's a challenge because she doesn't give you anything, Elise Mertens. That's doing her a disservice. She's not just a player that doesn't give you anything. You know, she won that match today, but Gauff will need to play well, really well. This won't. I'm not sure this will be a match that she can win ugly.
Yeah, that's a very good question, isn't it? I mean, it could be one that she kind of. I could almost imagine it being a classic. Her having, like, I suppose the scenario you're talking about is playing out of a skin and just dominating. That's what you're after if you're in a Coco Gauff mindset.
But she needs to be playing well to do that.
She would.
If she's not playing well, I think that's tough. Against Elisa Mertens.
I think it is tough too.
Mertens has had some pretty good prep today in terms of, like, dealing with a partisan American crowd. Like, you know, it was loud in Armstrong when Collins was winning points, and it was silent when Mertens was winning them.
She goes in the interview afterwards, "Thank you all for supporting supporting me, I mean, and my opponent, and I hope, I'm looking forward to you supporting me." Oh, well, Coco, I know I'm playing against next, but
very,
bless her, you know,
very
she's
a different approach to Laura Siegman, that, isn't
yeah.
it?
There was a warmth towards her, but she was so ecstatic. And she's the perennial third, fourth rounder, yeah. isn't she? And here she is again doing things. But I think it will be interesting to see whether Goff can just find a gear that Mertens can't deal with.
Exactly, which she does have, but she'll need to find it for two out of three sets. Mm.
Both top doubles players, like they've both got really good hand skills. I always think Mertens' hand skills are underrated. She's got a great backhand down the line, Mertens, but again, that might not be as effective as you would have thought a few months ago against Goff, because the Goff forehand has improved. I expect Goff to come out and play well in that. I thought Goff played really well today. I think the Siegmund match was an anomaly. I think it was all so weird. Maybe some nerves as well, you know, opening up Arthur Ashe night session with loads of big expectation on her. I think she dealt with it well. She got through it.
And it's a weird player literally playing the match of her, the set of her life.
Right, and we know how much, you know, something that Andy Murray was asked about in his press conference the other day was, what will Brad Gilbert bring to Coco Gauff? Because obviously Andy Murray worked with Brad Gilbert. And Murray said that Brad is so big on matchups, you know, and scouting out the opponent. And Brad Gilbert said on ESPN, Siegmund played totally different to how she'd been playing in qualifying. Like she wasn't coming in all the time. It was so maybe Gauff was caught a bit by surprise by the tactic that Siegmund brought. I don't think, as much as we're talking about the sort of personality change that Mertens has gone through, I don't think there's any surprises tennis-wise there.
No.
Like, Goff will be ready for that, I think.
Do you think anything goes for the crowd when a Goff match is on? I mean, I was just thinking back to what Siegmund was saying and complaining about the other day. Do you think she's got...
I don't think that was about Goff. I think that was about Siegmund. I mean, it was amplified by the fact that it was the American darling of the tournament, sure, but that was about what Siegmund was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. They would not have done that against someone just playing a normal match against Coco Gauff.
She was on the wind-up.
Big time.
Yeah.
She was right on the edge of what's legal.
She was...
Right on it.
She seemed outraged that people were accusing her of that and that the crowd were being so mean. And I understand how emotional you would get after a match like that, and it can be a bit overwhelming, and you might behave a bit badly and whatever. But I don't, with her, I've seen it so many times. Not on the same stage, but I don't buy it.
Dave's just greeting Coco Vanderwey there.
Co-commentary partner, sometimes. She's good, actually.
She's off to play doubles with Sophia Kenin, by the looks of things.
Oh.
Who plays tomorrow. Last couple of results to wrap up from the day session today. Wins for Iga Swiatek, the defending women's champion, 6-3, 6-4 over Darius Saville. Look, there's a golfing class here, but it was a more competitive match than I think any of us expected. I heard you doing a commentary report on this match, David, on BBC Radio, and he said, she likes to let you know she's there, does Saville.
Yes.
Which I thought was a great summary.
It's one of my favourite things is sitting next to David in the media room when he goes into commentary mode, because it's just, I would be so self-conscious about having to do commentary in a room that's sort of silent, and you're like, everyone can hear what I'm saying and listening, and David just gives it the full welly. I love it so much.
If I've got the earphones on and I can only hear the court and I'm commentating, I don't even know if people are there.
Sort of forget where you are.
But I do notice a couple of sort of side-eye glances from down the other end of the room sometimes.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, well, great summary of Swiatek Saville. She just sort of made herself as annoying as possible for
and
Swiatek.
That scoreline kind of tells the story, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Swiatek's just destroying everybody else, and Saville just makes it a bit more difficult. Good for her.
That is the bobbiest ponytail in tennis, isn't it? And plenty of other tennis players play with an identical ponytail, but it just doesn't bob in the same way.
No.
It has to be the combination of the hairstyle plus the walk.
Yes. I think
it's the interaction thereof.
Sophia Kenin can also pull that off, I think, to some degree.
Yeah, her ponytail bobs a lot. Novak Djokovic, 6-4, 6-1, 6-1 over Bernabe Zapata Miralles on Ash. Another golfing class.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought Zapata Miralles played really well for about half a dozen games at the start of the match. I think he was pretty much redlining it. And Djokovic was a little bit off, and the heat was not very nice at that stage. The sun was on the court, but there was also the mix of the shadow. The moment the shade properly came across the court and Djokovic could take that hat off that he hates wearing and just play normally, I mean, he just suddenly relaxed. You could see the... You sometimes use the word released, you know, just stopped being anxious, and he was fine. And look, it's so far, it's unfolding, I think, as one would expect. We've got certainly the two best players in men's tennis by a street who are just cruising through the draw, and it's only a couple of rounds, but Djokovic looks great.
Lazo Jera next for Novak Djokovic. There is a potential Jiří Veselý lurking in round four, although actually Francisco Cerúndolo is fighting back against Veselý and they're two all in the fifth set, so let's not go too far down that road of discussion. But I always think with Veselý, well, he's beaten him before
twice.
Yeah, exactly, and probably won't again, but, you know, just makes it ever so slightly more interesting in a draw that on paper for Djokovic just looks absolutely dreamy. Świątek, incidentally, has Kaya Juvan next, who is a close friend of hers,
yes.
I think, and they... just a player that I always think, when I watch her, wow, she's good, why aren't you better? And I don't have an answer to that, but I don't expect her to beat Świątek, but she's a nice player.
She's a lovely player to watch. I remember them playing at the French Open either last year or a couple of years ago, and, you know, knowing how close friends they are, and yet Świątek was just as ruthless as you would expect in that match, just took care of her. Juvan's father died last year, I believe, and, you know, I think there was a piece on the WTA website earlier this year. She took a break from tennis for a little bit, sort of stunted her development as a player, perhaps very understandably, but good to see her back. And yeah, I think she came through qualifying, so she's won a lot of matches already, which is good to see, because, you know, when I watch her, I always think there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, and just on a sadly similar subject, we also had a social media post from Caroline Garcia earlier on today telling us that her grandmother died suddenly on Monday, and she didn't attribute her loss yesterday to Wang Yifan specifically to that, but we discussed that at length yesterday and how shocking that result and performance were, and now it makes total and complete sense, and she has withdrawn from the doubles that she was due to play, and that's really tough, and we wish Caroline Garcia well. And just while we're getting sad stuff out of the way for a moment, I've just seen that Ayla Tomljanovic has withdrawn from her match tonight against Elena Rybakina. She's got a walk over Rybakina. That is so tough. Tomljanovic, having not played for the whole year, won our opener a couple of days ago, was a real good news story for tennis. I think everybody likes Tomljanovic. Haven't seen the reason, but that's tough for her. Really wish her well. Don't want to end part one on a bummer. Has anyone got anything fun?
Has anybody got anything fun?
You're stalling for time, David.
Yes, I am. No, I mean, I was just about to think about Dominic Thiem against Ben Shelton, and I've just remembered that's finished as well. Oh, I'm quite looking forward to seeing Francis Tiafoe. He always puts a smile on my face. So how about
that? Yeah, he's a good pick-me-up.
Yeah, he's who we'll be watching in the night session tonight. Also upcoming, we have... Who do we have tonight, Matt?
Petra Kvitova against Caroline Wozniacki. Partying like it's 2014.
Yeah, and Jennifer Brady against Magdalena Nett on Armstrong, and Taylor Fritz against Juan Pablo Varillas is on Armstrong as well. Incidentally, that Taylor Fritz section is suddenly so open. Can't remember exactly the names that are in it, but it's Tsitsipas's section, isn't it? He's been taken out, and Dominic Stricker's there.
Fritz needs to be getting to the quarterfinals.
Absolutely.
Here, absolutely. Which is where he would meet Novak Djokovic, but he needs to be winning his matches before then.
Big test for him now, I think. Yeah. Needs to be doing this. So we'll see. We'll be back later to wrap up the night session and any other sad news that unfolds in the meantime. Hopefully none of that. No one can be sad when Francis Tiafoe's on the scene. Good call, David. So we'll be back then. We'll speak to you in a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Well, we're back, folks, and so apparently is Caroline Wozniacki. It's been a fun night session. Before we get into all of that, I'm going to tell you that the Tennis Podcast is brought to you in association with AO Travel, who operate the travel program for the first Grand Slam of the calendar year. Of course, the next Grand Slam after this one, the Australian Open. Go to ozopentravel.com, that's Oz, A-U-S, opentravel.com, to check out the fantastic experiences they have to offer in Melbourne. And don't forget, we have a discount code of $500 Australian off any premium lounge package for friends of the Tennis Podcast subscribers. So one of many reasons to become a friend of the Tennis Podcast, and a link to do that is in our show notes. We hope to see you in Melbourne.
Oh, I want to go already.
hold your horses, David.
We haven't even finished this tournament yet. I already want to go to Australia.
Yep, that is the beauty of working in tennis. It just keeps coming.
Yeah.
The tennis pretty much literally never stops.
We are lucky, aren't we, in tennis, that there's four Grand Slams, you know, and that they're as long as they are.
Lucky and sometimes unlucky. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a treat of a sport to work in. And it's been an interesting night session. Francis Tiafoe brought the fun, brought the vibes. not a competitive match against Sebastian Offner. What was a competitive match, Caroline Wozniacki against Petra Kvitova, really, really partying like it was 2014 out there today. I mean, it looked like a vintage Wozniacki Kvitova match, a true rolling back of the years, won by Caroline Wozniacki, 7-5, 7-6, by far the biggest win of her comeback. And quite frankly, not one I perhaps thought she had in her.
No. And having done the Tennis Relived recently with Kim Clijsters and talked about her comeback in 2009. Look, I realise this is a second round match. It's a far cry from what Clijsters ultimately achieved. Who knows? Maybe Wozniacki is about to go on a run that will have us talking in the same breath. But I do think that the speed with which they both picked it up and got back to their respective levels. I'm sure Wozniacki's not at her very highest level. I think Clijsters was very close to her highest level by the time she got to the US Open. But she's clearly at a blummin' good level, because that is impressive to come back after the year she's been out. I mean, she's been out a lot longer than Clijsters was. She's had two children, 3.5 years out of the sport. And she can play still. I mean, her anticipation has always been excellent. It's always been a factor that in her game that I've been impressed with. Really nice backhand. I'm curious to know, Matt, I don't know whether we were doing the podcast with you when Wozniacki was really at the height of her career. I suppose we caught the Australian Open, didn't we, when you were there. But I'm curious to know what you think of her backhand in light of the list. But it's her anticipation. There was a moment towards the end where she's getting dominated and she just picks the right side almost before the shot's even been played. And so the instincts are there. She's obviously looks very fit and hungry for it. And I was impressed. Surprised, actually.
Mm. Yeah, me too. I'll be totally honest and say that I feel like there's been a slight arrogance attached to the comeback of Wozniacki. I sort of in many ways really admire the belief that she has in herself, and I know that you have to have that to be able to get to the top. It's a level of self-belief I can't understand. So if I'm sort of reading it wrong, I very much realize that that's possible. But just the fact that she didn't dip down to a lower level like Alina Svitolina did, and we know Svitolina had that 3 month or 4 month training block and was has come back a sort of slightly different player. When I watched Wozniacki in her warm-up tournaments, yes, she reached a pretty good level, but it was absolutely not matching the words that she wrote in her comeback essay, which was I believe I can win the US Open kind of thing, or I'm coming back because I think I have a shot at winning that. There was just a slight disconnect there for me, I suppose. But this is probably the first moment where I've thought, wow, that's really impressive. There was stunning, stunning tennis at times. And in terms of the backhand list, I mean, she does fit right into the category of the sort of players that I do like, and a lot of them are on the backhand list with the slightly dodgy forehand that just sort of sits there and is a bit of a weakness. But then this incredible backhand that she can, hit down the line or roll the wrists over and create angles on. She can do anything on that shot. So had I had a backhand list in the Wozniacki peak years, yeah, I think she probably would have been backhand list worthy. I think that's a good call.
Yeah, interesting. I felt very similarly to Matt about the Wozniacki comeback. I thought, you do you. Good luck to you.
Yeah,
if you've
absolutely
got unfinished business, absolutely. Good luck to you. I'm interested to see it. But in some of the things she was saying, and I heard an interview with her on the Sky coverage earlier on today ahead of her match, and she was, you had to look quite hard for what she was saying, because it was sort of slightly hidden. But she was basically saying, look, I was competitive. I reached world number one and won a Grand Slam during the Serena era. And, other associated players, Azarenka, Venus, all of that lot. So if I could do it then, I sure as hell can do it now if I put my mind to it, which I get the logic. I do think Serena is the greatest player of all time. There's obviously something in that. But equally, I think there is an element of dismissiveness and perhaps unfounded arrogance about how her game might match up against the level of the players at the top of the game now. I think she's perhaps underestimating them. Only time will tell, really. I was hugely impressed with her tonight. I've just been in contact with Andrew, who was on our Twitter tonight and who watched every single ball of it. And he said he thought he did see a little bit of evidence of a Wozniacki 2.0. He said, still not going for a ton on the forehand, but she was far more willing to change direction on the backhand, and it's still as sweet a shot as it's ever been. He says there were moments that she got tight when she was ahead in the second set. She went 4-2 up, and in the 5-4 game as well, where she had a few match points. But maybe there is Wozniacki 2.0 that's just sort of emerging from its shell. And I certainly am here to see it. I loved the intensity that she showed tonight. I really enjoyed that performance. I'm not sure how much we can read into it in terms of how her game stacks up against those at the top right now, because, as I said, this was a matchup that could have been lifted directly from 10 years ago, and it was a nostalgia fest, and no one loves nostalgia more than me, but I want to see her play the best of now. And she's going to play Jennifer Brady next, who won tonight. Her match was moved to Armstrong. Who knows whether Jennifer Brady's best is ahead of her or behind her?
That's another match I'm looking forward to seeing, because Jennifer Brady still clearly has a lot to offer as a tennis player. Whether her body can cope, we'll find out. But she was at a really high level when she was hit by those injuries. And you know, it was multiple runs at Grand Slams, got to a final, got to that incredible semi-final that she played against Osaka. You know, it's easy to forget just how good she was in that period. And I actually really enjoy seeing these players from the past come. I mean, I know it's not that long ago, but Wozniacki playing Kvitova, I really enjoyed that combination. I'm really looking forward to this next one. But I do want to see Wozniacki taste what it's like to play against Iga Świątek or Sabalenka. And you know, I mean, she did have a 10-1 record against Serena Williams, so it's not like she was sort of some dominant force when Serena was around. She was world number one a long, long time before. I think she took advantage of her gap. She absolutely maximised what she got, Wozniacki, but good luck to her that she's come back out here and played a match like that.
I mean, she played the Wimbledon champion just a few weeks ago. She played Markéta Vondroušová and made it competitive in the end, but there was a stretch in that match where Vondroušová was sort of picking her apart a bit. But I mean, she can kind of do that to anyone, Vondroušová, but with a few more matches in her legs, a few more, you know. It was her first time tonight playing a tiebreak since 2019, which was a great stat that came up on ESPN. And kind of like, yeah, like, of course it was. She's barely played any matches since 2019, so it's not that surprising that it's her first tiebreak. But getting used to that again, I don't think you can just immediately pick that up. I think that will get better with time, and if she's got a bit more match toughness, it would be interesting to see her come up against the best of today. Absolutely.
It's a fun storyline, isn't it? It's not the main plot of the women's tournament, this US Open. It's not like, I don't think anyone's going to start going, oh my god, Wozniacki could do it closed and win this tournament. I mean, maybe if she goes to another couple of rounds, that dialogue will start, but it's a fun little subplot. And Wozniacki against Jennifer Brady is a big deal match for this tournament.
And then wouldn't it be winner to play Goff if Goff got that far?
Look, if I'm doing the scheduling, I haven't looked exactly forensically at what the men's matches will be on Friday, but if I'm ESPN, I'm pushing for Goff Mertens and Brady Wozniacki to be the night session. Why can't it be?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the night sessions until the semi-finals, I think they just always go one men's and one women's, don't
but
they?
There's no reason why they can't do different.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to see Goff on Friday night, or those ones, getting the best slots, really, because they're the matches of the this side of the draw, I think.
Taylor Fritz won tonight 1-2-2 against Juan Pablo Varillas. Yes, that's a match he should win. He should be reaching the quarterfinals with how the draw is looking. I mean, even if the draw hadn't opened up for him, he's the ninth seed. You could argue he should still be reaching the quarterfinals from that section, but he has failed to deliver at Grand Slams. He lost to Brandon Holt in the first round here last year. So, you know, him winning matches at Grand Slams that he ought to win is not a given. So well done to him for winning that and doing it so convincingly. Not the case for Casper Ruud. He lost out in five sets to Zheng Jizhen.
Wow.
The very talented Chinese player. 6-4, 5-7, 6-2. Love 6. 6-2 for Zheng this evening. Now, I think Zheng is a really good player.
Yeah, you see, on the tip of my tongue is me saying that's a bad loss for Casper Ruud as the defending runner-up from last year, but then you've seen more of him than me. I saw one match earlier this year. He's a really hard, big ball striker with like a sort of long wingspan and a whiplash
fast arm
delivery, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think when he gets in a rhythm and gets set in a match. I think I watched him play Karatsev in Madrid, and it was just such sweet ball striking. Yeah. It was a real sort of connoisseur's paradise, that match. He's been in and out since then, but I watched him up close during Madrid when he went on that run, I think, to the quarterfinals, and I really was impressed. He's got something about him, and his technique looks solid to me. There's not a lot that can break down about it. Casper Ruud, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because part of me thinks, well, he's shown no form coming in, so maybe it's no great surprise that he's off second round. But none of the slams where he's... This is the great contradiction of Casper Ruud. We think of him as missed consistency, but actually, none of the slams where he's had his best results and reached the finals has he shown any particular form in the lead-up tournament. So actually, maybe this is a shock that he's lost in the second round. I don't really know. I don't know how many waves that'll cause, that the fifth seed and last year's finalist has lost in the second round.
No, I don't think it'll cause huge waves because, as you said, he has a bit of a history of losing in the second round of slams. He's keeping up his record of either losing in the second round or reaching the final. I think he's done that in all of his last seven slams.
That must please you. You like a nice, neat
Yeah. Thank
pattern.
You, Casper, for not going out in the third round. I do appreciate
do
the commitment
when
to the bit.
Yelena Ostapenko had the record of first round or winning.
Yeah. At Roland Garros, and then she ruined it by doing something really mundane. And
you'd take it over six quarterfinals, wouldn't you? Three second rounds and three finals.
Right, exactly. I think there's a peak level which a lot of others are sort of searching for. But then, you know, no one put him in the same category as Carlos Alcaraz or Novak Djokovic here, and I don't think anyone really had him in that second category either of Daniil Medvedev and Jannik Sinner.
Did any of us put him in the quarterfinals? No, I didn't.
I didn't. No. So I don't.
But I haven't at any of the slams where he's reached the final either. So
I mean, I think what happened today is he lost his head after that fourth set. There was drama involving toilet breaks, and he wanted a rule clarification. He was unsure, and in his press conference he said he was frustrated and he sort of lost his groove and let Zheng get on a roll at the start of the fifth. And that's a bit surprising, I suppose, from a player of Ruud's experience to let that happen. And honestly, if you reflect on his season, Roland Garros aside, it's been a disappointment, really. I mean, he left this tournament last year, you know, he's a match away from world number one, wasn't he? And he's now going to be world number nine. You know, which maybe last year was overachieving. I don't think anyone ever thought Casper Ruud would be world number one, and world number nine maybe feels about right. But given where he set the bar last year, he hasn't quite been able to match that again this year.
Interesting one. But I am pleased to see Zheng Zhizhen doing well. Tommy Paul, probably the last significant result to wrap up from today. He had to come back from two sets of love down, one in five against Roman Safiulin, 6-2, 6-4, 6-3 in the end. Kind of just two separate tennis matches. no tiebreak sets in there. I know the fourth set was really competitive, felt like it was all hanging in the balance there. But Tommy Paul is such an athlete that actually, you know, coming back from two sets of love down, once he's in his groove, kind of just doesn't feel like that bigger thing for him. Like, you just, it's just not a question whether he's got it physically.
I think it's mental, there. Right? It's the first time he'd ever done it. He'd been two sets down, I think, nine times before, finally does it at the 10th time. Like, yeah, I would always back him physically to be able to do it. But until you've done it, you don't know you can do it mentally. It's a big hurdle there. Yeah.
I do find that interesting, though, that we're all backing his physicality because we've been told what a great athlete he is by, I think, the American guys. He tested the best. And yet to look at him, I would never have believed that. When I first saw Tommy Paul, he is not a remarkable-looking man. And yet his ability to move around a tennis court and just keep on going for hours on end is remarkable. And we you know, you can stick him on highlight reels. We've just seen one on SportsCenter, haven't we, here on ESPN. And he's doing acrobatics to lunge and get to a ball, and he still manages to balance, get back in position, and be ready for the next shot.
Mind you, Adrian Mannarino was doing that as well.
Well, between the two of them, they own SportsCenter tonight. I think I might have become an Adrian Mannarino fan.
They segued from Adrian Mannarino to the Dodgers in baseball.
Tell you what,
it was a whiplash edit.
I am really impressed with those three American men for different reasons. Fritz, for what you've said. Mm-hmm. Paul, because he's come back from two sets love down. And Francis Tiafoe, because he has just played thoroughly professional tennis within himself to win in straight sets. And it was perfectly good enough, but it wasn't razzmatazz stuff. It didn't need to be. And he got the job done.
It feels like an American pack hunter job against Novak Djokovic in that bottom half of the draw. Rune's gone, Tsitsipas has gone, Ruud's gone, Felix Auger-Aliassime's gone. You know, it's Djokovic, and the other big names there are those three Americans.
And he would have to play two of them, wouldn't he, I think?
Right, I think Fritz in the quarters, and then it would be Tiafoe or Paul in the semis, obviously, if they all get there.
Imagine if Eubanks hadn't fallen.
Right.
Those things should happen, really, from where we are, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should. You know, that absolutely should.
Those meetings should happen.
Yeah. Tomorrow's schedule, folks, looks thus. It is failing to load on my app, but I can tell you from memory that Arthur Ashe Stadium is opened by Grigor Dimitrov and Andy Murray tomorrow. Are we okay with that being there?
I'm looking forward to it, but then I'm quite pleased that we get to cover it for British radio and stuff
good.
Like
it's
that.
It's good for British audiences, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It is followed by Janina Wickmeyer.
No comment.
Is it?
Against Madison Keys.
Oh, right.
And that is followed in the night session by Carlos Alcaraz against Lloyd Harris. Carlos Alcaraz thought he was playing George Harris. No, Lloyd Harris.
I do stuff like that, Carlos. Don't worry.
And finally, on Ash, it's Patricia Maria Thieg against Jessica Pegula. Sonego against Sinner, all Italian match. First up on Armstrong, then it's Jody Burridge, Sharina Sabalenka, Svitolina Pavlyuchenkova. Last day session match there, and the night session on Armstrong is Kazatkina Kenin which I think could be fantastic. And then Medvedev against Chris O'Connell. The next potential end to John Isner's career comes first on Grandstand tomorrow. He faces Michael Moe, Trevisan, Vondroušová, Monfils, Rublev, Jabeur, Noskova over there. Wawrinka's in action over on court 17.
It's getting good.
Hurkacz, Draper is there somewhere.
Court five.
Where else?
Of course it is.
Where else could it be? It's the best place to be, some would say.
Carbayer's Baena.
It's a great schedule tomorrow. Yeah, we're really pumped. And we should probably go and get some sleep order to prepare for it.
I want to go to court five for a bit tomorrow to see.
You'll have to find it first.
I know. Well, I'm going to take Holger with
there's
me.
There's a map on
Holger's Twitter.
It's still there. Right, folks, that's your lot for today. Willow is our US Open mascot. Hello, lovely Willow. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. David's got Maisie.
Not Maisie.
And Matt has struck out with Darwin once again. Nicholas Jarry is your banker
so badly.
For tomorrow.
Nicholas Jarry, come on.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our executive producers and top folks, Jamie, Hannah, Andrew, hello to you. And hello, Matt, to our shout outs for today.
We start with Katerina, who is originally from Greece, but has been living in the Netherlands for the past 10 years.
I think that's sort of like a neighbouring church. Maybe like the graveyard of the church.
You've said the graveyard before and the person wasn't happy.
Have I done that before? What other bits of a church are there?
The car park.
It's not getting too much better, is it?
Yeah, you get the idea, Katerina. What I'm saying is you're part of the family.
Yeah. I think there was a tennis player in the 80s called Katerina Lundqvist.
I was going to go Katerina Srebotnik.
Well, that's quite good. Well
who
done.
Definitely did exist.
She definitely did exist. But I do now need to Google Katarina Lundqvist to find out. Because I think she was a Swedish player who was in the top 20.
Top 20?
Yeah, that's my prediction.
Okay, well, David's doing that. We'll do our next shout out. But thank you, Katerina.
Mm. And I would say Siniakova.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, I really could have made this easier for myself, couldn't I?
We've also got Natalie Matlack, who says Matt as in Matt Roberts and Lack as in lackluster.
That's very helpful, Natalie.
Hopefully the only time that Matt Roberts and lackluster are used next to each other.
Natalie, like our French Open landlady.
Had any texts from her recently, David?
Nope.
She loves to clean.
I can update you to tell you that I'm a genius and that in 1963 Katarina Lundqvist was born, a former professional tennis player, and she reached the semi-finals of both the Australian Open and Wimbledon in the late 80s and was number 10 in the world.
Thank you, Katarina. Thank you, Natalie. I'm sure Natalie loved her shout out mostly being about Katarina Lundqvist from the 80s.
I was too busy thinking about Katarina at that particular point. Let me have a little think about Natalie. Deshi.
Yeah.
Who is
that's the big one after Natalie, our landlady.
Yeah.
Thank you, Natalie.
Tozia.
All the French Natalie's.
Very good.
And finally, we have Catherine Higgins.
Oh. This is same church, same pew, isn't it?
No.
No, okay.
No, same church. Quite a different pew.
K and a Y?
No, but a K and an A.
Ah, the lesser spotted.
Mm. Catherine Higgins from Fleet in Hampshire.
Oh, I know Fleet, yeah.
But originally from Bristol, and she's put Lake Joe Dury.
Ah.
She supports Bristol Rovers, doesn't she, Joe?
Lovely Joe.
Well, I know, I've been to Bristol, but I don't know it, but I know Fleet a bit. Driven through it a few times. lovely Hampshire, lots of nice chalk streams, great for wild swimming.
Okay.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah, thank you, Catherine, Natalie, Katerina, all of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to friends of the Tennis Podcast for supporting us to be here at the US Open, where we'll be back tomorrow with another pod, and we'll speak to you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.